Hello and welcome to Beyond Boundaries, the Demobi podcast, a platform dedicated to raising awareness and understanding for children with autism and supporting victims of domestic abuse. I'm your host, Cameron, and I'm thrilled to bring you stories of resilience, empowerment, and the triumph of the human spirit. I'm here today with Kai Da Costa, a master's student from Burton. Hi, Kai.
How are we doing today, guys?
I'm doing really well, you know. It's nice to see you.
Lovely to see you as well, Cameron.
Can you share with us a bit about your personal journey with disability and how it's shaped your life?
Yeah, of course I can. So first off, my name's Kai Francisco Terence Da Costa.
Nice one. Full title.
Yeah, why not? Why? It sounds very official, so yeah, I like to throw it out there. I study psychology. Okay. In 2015, I was a mechanic. Well, I was trained to be a mechanic. I was an apprentice mechanic, and that was until I got involved in a road traffic accident on my way to work on my motorbike. That caused me lifelong disability, a fully paralyzed left arm due to a brachial plexus injury, as well as being in and out of wheelchairs for the last 8 years due to a herniated spinal cord and 3 separate spinal operations, as well as the complex disability. I've experienced chronic pain for the last 8 years since 2015. And now I have tried to flip the script on my life. And instead of being a victim, instead of being a sufferer, I've decided to be a warrior and stand up in the face of adversity. And now I dedicate my life to trying to fight chronic pain, teach other people to, you know, understand their chronic pain and fight it without medication or surgery, bring in more psychosocial intervention into it, as well as help people understand that disability doesn't mean you have an inability to be a success in life. It just means you have to face other challenges that other people may not,
face. That's great. Now, I wonder, what are some of the initial challenges you face when you first realized the extent of what had happened?
Yeah, so obviously, as you can imagine, being a mechanic, from the age of 14 up until the age of 18, that's all I knew, really. What I've noticed in life is you build up identity surrounding your hobbies and your work.
Yeah, 100%.
If you're a rapper, you put on the rapper mentality. Mm. If you're a chef, you put on the chef mentality. And I was a mechanic, so I put on the mechanic mentality. Mm-hmm. I ate Gangster's pasties, I drank energy drinks, I just went to work on the weekend, I drank beer. I didn't live a healthy lifestyle. Mm. I lived the cliche lifestyle that I thought
that's what you were supposed to be doing. Yeah.
When I had the accident, obviously being a mechanic and in my spare time, I did magic. Obviously, I didn't get a lot of women at this point in my life. everything was using my arms.
Yeah.
And to lose an arm then, you don't just lose limbs, you lose identity.
Yeah.
And I physically lost who I was. And waking up for the first time, knowing that I was never going to get my left arm back, it made, you know, for the first 6 months, I'm not going to lie to you, I was depressed. I was in the pit. Yeah, I was like, you know, it was waking up every day going, oh my God, what do I do?
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened one morning. I genuinely, it was almost like God kissed me when I woke up.
I love that. Yeah.
I woke up and instead of it being, what do I do? It was, wait, what do I do? I could do anything here. Mm. This is how often does an 18-year-old get to completely restart their life and get a complete fresh start?
Yeah.
Even though that's what 18 is meant to be about, leaving school and going to get a fresh start. Yeah. It was like, I literally, you know, got given the keys to go, look, you decide your future now. You can do anything from this point. And I just went, all right, what do I want to do? And I wanted to travel. I wanted to study psychology. I wanted to get involved in music. I wanted to help people. So I dedicated my life to all of that. And through all of it, it's brought me onto the next step. And here I am today.
That's brilliant. Yeah. I mean, I come from a rugby background myself. I played rugby for a long time and I had to leave because I dislocated my shoulder so many times.
Yeah.
And not having the use of my arm even for a couple of weeks or months is crazy for me. So
no, he said when he went skiing and broke his leg, he was like, Kai, you've been in a wheelchair for so long. How do you do it? And I was like, you do appreciate the little things when you're in those situations, for sure. You really do.
Yeah, 100%. Like itching. Scratching that itch.
Those casts, I can't reach that spot
on my back to this day, you know.
Quite literally.
So how was your experience with disability influence your pursuit of your psychology degree?
Well, so I went into psychology originally just because obviously when you go through such physical trauma, it brings up mental trauma.
Yeah.
You can't lose limbs and not face the PTSD, and you can't, do you know what I mean? Like, and all the things with just being in a car, not even driving it or being, you know, just a passenger, you have that fear of the road and stuff like that.
True.
So it was difficult. It still is difficult. Mm. I'm not going to deny that I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, it's easy living with one. It's like, obviously there's things in my life that are difficult to overcome, but I do manage it. the biggest change I would say that's happened since being disabled is that my ability to ask for help has just gone sky high. Like, I used to be afraid asking people for help as if it was a weakness.
Yeah.
And I've realized that, you know, every progression I've ever made in life has come from asking for a hand. Yeah.
Sometimes the loudest voices are the ones that get help, not necessarily the ones in most need.
Well, that's it. I think that this is the thing, like, the biggest successes in life aren't the people that don't fail. Mm. They're the people that failed most. They're just the people that aren't scared of it.
Yeah.
And asking for help is accepting that you're not going to do it on your own.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You don't have to do it on your own. There's no, do you know what I mean? Like, you're no less strong for asking for help. And I think that it's become a superpower of mine, being able to go, do you know what? I can't do this on my own. I'm going to collaborate. I'm going to bring people in. But when you're going through life, you know, pursuing, you know, be it psychology, pursuing music, pursuing, you know, the gym or whatever it is, you're only going to become exponentially better through help. You can only get so far on your own. So
exactly.
You know, you want to be the best success in the world, that's the person that asks for the most help and gets more people involved and stuff like that. So I think my biggest, the best thing that came out of my disability was my ability to network and say, do you know what, I can't do this on my own.
That's great. Yeah, there's I think it's a Nigerian proverb actually that I really like that says, if you want to go fast, go on your own, but if you want to go far, go together.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that that's something that you really come to terms with when you physically can't do something on your own.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. It's like, obviously, the reason I've gone into the more pain background and the more disability background is because, obviously, going through all the disability and being in and out of wheelchairs, I've had extensive neurological rehabilitation, physiotherapy, walking rehab, muscle skeletal physiotherapy, neurological. I've gone through the full, the full, you know, spectrum of rehabilitations, and I've realized that these people have genuinely, without them, I wouldn't be walking. I wouldn't be able to live a normal life. I wouldn't be able to go traveling and doing public speaking, be able to join you on this podcast. It's like, you know, thanks to other people getting involved in my life and assisting me, I'm able to live a normal life.
And that's medical practitioners, volunteers, PTs.
100%.
Have you worked with charities that helps you yourself?
So I work with a charity at the moment called Flipping Pain, which is an organization that helps people flip the script on how they perceive their own chronic pain. Obviously, you know, 1 in 10 people suffer with chronic pain in your life. It's huge.
What is chronic pain for the people who don't know?
So chronic pain is persistent pain that lasts. It's technically defined by the NHS as persistent pain that lasts 12 weeks or more, regardless of treatment or medication.
Okay.
But it's a very complex umbrella term for people that have either a broken leg and the leg's never felt the same again. It still hurts even after there's physiological recovery, even though the doctors are saying it looks fine, there's still pain. Or people that just have like fibromyalgia, where they've just woken up one day and they're in severe chronic pain and they don't know why, and there's no physiological trigger, there's no noxious stimuli, there's nothing like that, they've just woke up in pain. And what we know about pain so far is that, an easy way to explain it, it's like an alarm system on a car. Have you ever seen that certain cars, their alarms are a bit more sensitive to others, and that the wind can blow, and that the alarm's just going off, and there's that one guy in the neighbourhood whose car's always going off, and you're like, what's going on? And it's just, that's like that person with chronic pain.
Okay, right.
Pain is an alarm system.
Yeah.
It, you know, it tells you when there's something wrong, traditionally.
Yeah.
But like most things, through evolution and through time, it's become a bit over complex to the point now that it links into our conscious understanding. So now, someone can feel pain and then not be any physical trigger. So what would start off as acute pain, where you get a cut and a bruise or something, and you know that starts with pain, your brain sees that as a threat, it oversensitizes, and then next time all you need is a gust of wind like that car, and then it triggers and you get that chronic pain flare up. And so basically I'm trying to help people understand that, you know, things like catastrophizing your pain in your head can quite literally make it worse. If what we know physiologically about it, if you get, you know, cortisol, the fight or flight response hormone, the more cortisol that is pumping around your body, the more pain you're likely to experience. So actively pursuing things like meditation, good sleeping patterns, good eating patterns, going to the gym to, you know, regulate cortisol levels, they can all help with the management of chronic pain, and they don't involve the harmful medications and surgeries that a lot of people traditionally go for because of the biological model. We're trying to flip in pain as an organization, get people to understand that you don't need necessarily surgeries and medications all the time. There are a lot of treatments out there that you can do that will help you day to day without, you know, having life-changing side effects like myself being paralyzed or whatnot because of surgeries and stuff.
And so you said there are ways to deal with these psychological response systems and feedback loops. What are some of the coping mechanisms that you've had to develop in the face of challenges, both physically and mentally?
So a big one, and it's one of the statements that go with the charity Flipping Pain, is that hurt does not mean harm.
Okay.
And that's the understanding that someone, your harm, your ability to feel pain doesn't actually correspond to how damaged you actually are.
Right.
So there's been a lot of studies, a lot of fMRI research, a lot of neuroimaging studies that show loads of spinal cords that look damaged, but the patients experience no pain, and then loads of spinal cords that look completely fine, and the patients are in agony.
Wow.
And it's like, well, that doesn't make sense. Wow. Surely that you would associate pain with harm.
Yeah.
But no, that doesn't seem to be the case. Yeah. That's why you can see people who are physiologically completely healthy, but you know, when you know, every day they're complaining they can't get out of bed in the morning because they're just suffering. So it's like to understand that, you know, a lot of people, when they're feeling all of this chronic pain, when they're feeling, you know, like, oh my God, the world's ending, you know, neuropathic pain, especially what I get sometimes, it's like you feel like the world is crumbling around you.
Yeah.
And you likely associate that with, oh, I'm damaged.
Yeah.
Something is wrong inside of me. My spinal cord's damaged. I've, you know, this injury's getting worse. Is it? And then that, what does that do? That makes you more stressed.
Yeah.
What does stress do? Release more cortisol. Mm. What does cortisol do? Increase your pain.
Yeah.
So it's this vicious cycle of catastrophizing your pain, you thinking that you're damaged, that damage leading to you causing more cortisol to run around your body, and that causing the inflammation to get worse. So what you need to do is implement psychosocial treatments like breathing techniques. There's obviously that, I don't know if you guys know Huberman, the famous podcaster at the moment.
I'm not familiar.
Talks about a lot of neurological stuff. He's like the Jordan Peterson of the body,
right,
I would say.
Right, okay,
very much into neurroscience, but he talks a lot about the double breath.
Yeah.
You ever noticed when a child is in distress and they're crying, they're like... And that's because it's ingrained in us, in the innate system.
Yeah.
The number one thing that reduces cortisol by 50% isn't a medication. Mm. It isn't going to the gym. It's a double breath. It's just a double inhale. That reduces cortisol more than most medications out there. And the fact that that isn't publicly known is crazy. But this is the thing. We can learn a lot from children. We can really. Yeah. And the whole idea of chronic pain. Have you ever noticed that if your child falls over, if a kid, like, you know, your niece or nephew falls over, they look at their parents before they start to cry, because they want the mum to go, oh, are you okay?
Yeah.
Half the time, if you ignore the kid, they will just get up and walk away. They won't even feel pain.
Heard that,
It's a learnt, you know, a lot of this pain is a learnt condition.
I think that really links into your interaction with people and their perception of you in general. I think if someone tells you that there's something distinctly or inherently wrong with you as a person, in the case of autistic children, if all you hear is you're different, and that's worse, that's bad, you start to believe that yourself. I think.
Well, I think we're seeing that a lot with mental illness. Mm. The idea of the over prescribing of SSRIs and stuff like that. I think that,
what are SSRIs?
They're selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors.
Okay.
So what they do is they work with a neurotransmitter called serotonin, and they basically stop the uptake in between the, I'm not going to go into the neuroscience, but there's a little gap in between each neuron called the synaptic cleft.
Okay.
And what happens is if you have a store of neurotransmitters there, it keeps you, those neurotransmitters basically stay active when bound to a receptor.
Okay.
And they just stop the reuptake of those. So there's more serotonin in your system at one time. Now the issue with that is that obviously if people are suffering with, you know, really bad depression and mental illness, they should seek the right treatments. But people need to also understand that you should understand that you're in control of your own mental illness, and you are in control of your own life. And although it is difficult, there are ways. I think there's more power in someone who's able to go, do you know what? I'm going to go to bed on time.
Yeah.
I'm going to eat the right food. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to go out with my friends and have a healthy night out and stuff like that, and see if that aids my mental health.
Yeah.
As opposed to leading the same lifestyle day in, day out, and then taking these medications that are dramatically affecting their neurochemistry. And it's like, I call it artificial happiness.
Yeah.
And I'm like, look, artificial happiness is great when you know, if you're in the bottom of the pit.
Mm.
But that real, natural, pure,
the good,
you
know, stuff.
That's the good, the good stuff, man. That's the happiness everyone should be going for and striving for.
Well, Kai, we could talk to you all day.
Indeed,
you've got stories for days. And I would love to have you back on another time. But that's all we can do for this week.
No, that's completely fine. Thank you guys for having me on. And I'll definitely look forward to speaking to you again soon.
That's it for this week's installment of Beyond Boundaries. Thank you for listening.